The Vampire Kitty Cat Chronicles, Chapter 14, Busted. Tom finished off his V1 juice and gazed at the bottle. A thin film of red slid down the sides and pooled in the bottom. He said, "The cops are just going to love finding cabinets full of blood." On the monitor, the SWAT team formed two lines outside the front door and stood at attention. Assault rifles ready. After a pause, a guy with incredibly broad shoulders walked between the lines and stopped outside the door. I recognized Captain Cook, the cop who'd busted Bobson. He carried a bullhorn. An equally broad-shouldered woman in a uniform, something gray and not the navy blue of the police, followed him. She carried a thing that looked like a butterfly net. Behind those two marched Ginger Grant and her cameraman, Ernie. When they stopped, Captain Cook raised his bullhorn and said,
"This is Captain Cook. I order you to surrender the cat known as Patch."
Ginger Grant signaled the cameraman to move around to the side. He did, and aimed his lens at the captain. Her voice tinny on the speaker, she said,
"What's more for the news, Captain?"
Cook swelled his chest and said,
"This is Captain Cook. Surrender the cat."
Meg came to me, pulled me close, and put an arm around me in a protective way.
"They want Patch? Whatever for?"
"Yeah, I didn't remember breaking any laws," Tim said.
"There's something familiar," Tom finished, "about that cop."
Meg scratched behind my ears.
"He arrested Pat Bobson."
"Yes, but it's something else." Tim snapped his fingers. "The election, he's," Tom added, "running for police chief." Captain Cook swelled up his chest again and said to the camera,
"We will not allow our citizens and their pets to be terrorized and murdered by these vampire scum,"
Vera said.
"Well, he just lost my vote."
Turning back to the door, Cook jutted his chin out and said,
"Surrender the cat or we're coming in."
Vera said to Tom,
"We can't just let them bust in here."
"Is there a way to talk to them?" She handed him a microphone.
"This works speakers by the front door."
"Captain Cook, this is Patch's legal counsel speaking. What is the charge?" The captain opened his mouth, but it was Ginger Grant who provided the answer. She screeched,
"Murder most foul!"
She sobbed, then paused until the cameraman swung the camera her way, and then she said in a quivery voice,
"My baby, my sweet little puffy."
She held something up toward the camera. Vera stepped to a television and clicked it on. The picture showed Grant, her face screwed up as if she was crying, but with no tears. She held a picture of her formerly yappy poodle at the camera. "Oh, yeah. Breakfast." Grant turned to the captain. Now her voice shifted into murderous.
"Get him, chief."
She paused, and I saw her lips move just slightly, like she was counting 1, 2, 3. With a smile, she said,
"Oh, I'm sorry. That's Captain, isn't it?"
Meg said,
"That smarmy bitch."
Cook turned to the baddest-looking swatter.
"Prepare to break in."
The SWAT guy said,
"What do you think, sir? The battering ram or,"
he grinned,
"explosives?"
The captain said, "Take no chances with these creatures. Blow it."
The cameraman's voice slipped in.
"Oh, boy."
Tom said into the microphone, "There's no need for that. We're coming down to talk. But we can't be exposed to sunlight, so you'll have to come inside." On our television, the picture zoomed in on the captain's jutting jaws and courageously stern gaze.
"Agreed,"
Grant's voice whispered.
"A stunningly brave move by Captain Cook. Will this gutsy man survive this daring raid on a vampire lair to continue his bid for police chief?"
Meg picked me up and held me to her. She shouted at the TV,
"You can't have him!"
Tim said, "We have to talk to them." Vera turned to Meg and me.
"If they bust in here, we could all be doomed."
Considering what Vera had done for me, the least I could do was talk. I butted Meg's hand with my head. She looked down at me.
You want to do this?
Not really, but it was the honorable thing to do. I said, Murph.
Tim said, Don't worry. I'm sure we can straighten this out.
Downstairs, Vera opened the front door. The captain marched in, followed by the woman with the net. Right behind them came Grant and the cameraman. He pointed his lens at me and Meg's arms. Tom said,
We have no need for the press, Captain.
He indicated the door. My client should have privacy here.
Cook never even glanced at him. Keeping his gaze on me, he said, Patch the cat. You are under arrest for the murder of Puffy, a sweet little dog.
If he'd ever heard it yap, he wouldn't be saying that.
Tom said, On what grounds do you make this ridiculous accusation?
Grant said, Show them.
The cameraman lowered his camera and stared at the little viewfinder screen that stuck out to the side while he pressed a button. Then he held it up for Tom to take a look.
Got it all on one tape.
Tom watched. After a few seconds, Tom stepped back.
Well, it looks like Patch. He gazed at me.
Sorry, pal, but your calico markings are distinctive, and you definitely terminated that yappy little dog.
You bet I did. It was self-defense of my ears. And then there was the bloodlust, too.
The broad-shouldered woman held out her net. Tom stepped in front of it. My client is willing to surrender, but to go outside in that would be the end of him.
Grant snapped, Poetic justice!
Captain Cook said, This creature's problem with daylight is not...
I wonder, Meg cut in. She gazed up at Captain Cook. I wonder how many cat lovers are voters in Bloomsburg.
The captain paused and then said, As I was saying, this creature's problem with daylight is not going to be used against him.
To that woman, he said, Get a light-proof container. It will be safe indoors at the pound.
The pound? In the kitty cat world, that's known as the end of the line. I wrenched free from Meg's arms and leaped for the floor. But Net Woman was quick. She snared me in that net before I touched down. She lowered it to the floor and turned it over, trapping me. She said to the captain,
Cover him.
Captain Cook drew a pistol and aimed it at me. She reached behind her and brought out a sack made of black cloth. I have to admit, the woman was good. With one smooth move, she raised the rim of the net and scooped me into the sack. A sack. I hoped nobody I knew was watching. I can tell you that a day spent in the basement of a city pound was, for my nose, a day in hell. Now that I was a vampire, I didn't really sleep anymore. During daylight hours, I lapsed into a state of rest pretty similar to catnapping, only more conscious. Too bad for my sense of smell. The stench of feces from the kennels above settled in the basement and drove me to dreaming of a giant sack of kitty litter opening from the sky and burying the top floor. So I was more than happy when, the next night, Tom and Meg arrived. I was up and pacing behind the bars of my cage, the burn of bloodlust so hot I was beginning to panic. Meg poured a bottle of V1 juice in a bowl, and soon the pain turned into lassitude and purring. While I savored the rush through my body and enjoyed feeling the beat of my heart, Tom said, Time to go to court, Patch. He placed me in a critter carrier with a curtain across the front door. No more sacks. I would seek justice with my dignity intact. In the courtroom, Tom led Meg to the defense table. Meg let me out of the carrier and set me on the tabletop. We had just gotten settled when the court clerk called the court to order and people stood. The clerk said,
This court is in session. Judge Juanita Escobar presiding.
And a small, dark-haired, brown-skinned woman in black robes came from a door in the back. She sat behind her big desk and surveyed the courtroom.
Caramba! Look at all the people.
There was a fair crowd. Vera and Bruce were there, and so was the twin lawyer's aide, Igor. He gave me a little wave of his fingers. Seiko stood next to him. No Lester. And then there were several reporter types and a couple of TV cameras. Newslady Ginger Grant stood behind another table with a skinny little guy with pale blonde hair and ghost-white skin. Captain Cook, looking serious, sat in the spectator area behind the prosecutor's table. Next to him slouched Ernie, Grant's cameraman.
His beard looked trimmed, and he had a fresh bandana on his head. Then I spotted Amy. My former associate smiled at me, gave me a little wave of her fingers, and mouthed, "Hi, Spot." Despite the spot, the sight of her brought joy into what was so far a crummy day. Judge Escobar said, "Be seated, por favor." Her expression was bored and hard. She looked up at the clerk. "What's up, Watson?" The clerk, a tubby, balding guy with a comb-over that started at the back of his head and ended with the fringe above his forehead, said, "First is case 432, Your Honor, the arraignment of Patch the Cat for the murder of Puffy the dog." Judge Escobar's eyebrows lifted, and she turned her gaze on me. I guessed she was in her 40s. Her big brown eyes were not friendly. "Is this some kind of joke? A cat?" The prosecutor stood. TV cameras trained on him, and he turned a little bit sideways. I thought so they could catch his profile. "Your Honor, this is the notorious vampire cat, and the state seeks justice for the slaying of Ms. Ginger Grant's beloved poodle." Notorious? I wondered if I'd get fan mail in jail. Judge Escobar eyed Grant and then smiled at the prosecutor. Her smile was not friendly. "Oh, yes. You're running for district attorney, aren't you, Mr. Povich?" A look of chagrin flickered over his face. Then he straightened and squeaked. "Yes, Your Honor, but I fail to see what that has to do with anything." The judge sighed. "Yeah, right. How am I going to try a cat?" Tom stood. "Tom Conway, Your Honor, for the defense." "If I may, Your Honor, I believe the cat's owner can speak for him." I started to bristle at the owner crack, but then Meg stood beside him and stroked my back. Tom said, "This is Meg Murrow, and I feel confident that she is qualified to speak for her cat." The judge said, "Ah, yes, the vampire woman running for city council. Is this all a publicity stunt?" Tom said, "No, ma'am. This is not our idea, and my client is not guilty, and we would much rather not be here." It was the judge's turn to bristle. "Something wrong with my courtroom?" I had to hand it to Tom. Smooth as a Persian's fur, he said, "Absolutely not. Your reputation for fairness and expertise is unmatched in the city." Tom's sucking up ran aground on the judge's deepening scowl. "So you're pandering now? Because I am a woman? Because I'm Latina?" Tom gave as good as he got. He drew himself up and said, "Your Honor, as a member of a minority myself, I understand your sensitivity to such possibilities. However, unless you wish to say that you are neither fair nor expert, I believe my statement is accurate." Her eyes widened and her jaw dropped for a moment. Then she restored her scowl and scoffed. "Minority? What minority is your Caucasian self a member of?" "Vampires, Your Honor. And we are the subjects of enormous discrimination. The court will soon be seeing a class-action lawsuit seeking relief under the Americans with Disabilities Act." Judge Escobar opened her mouth as if to speak, but shut it. The hard, hostile look on her face softened as she gazed at Tom. Then it toughened again. "Have you also heard me referred to as a hanging judge?" He nodded. "I'm in favor of severe penalties myself, Your Honor. My client has no problem with that." I eyed Tom and gave him a soft hiss. He winked at me. I did not find it reassuring. The judge leaned forward. "I am warning you, sir. One hint that you are not sincere and you will be held in contempt." Tom nodded. "And I would deserve it, Your Honor." She turned to the prosecutor. "Speaking of sincerity, you're bringing a charge of murder against a cat? Tell me that Ms. Grant's stature as Bloomsburg's top media personality has nothing to do with it." Poet said, "That's correct. No connection." He tried to trade stares with the judge, but quickly dropped his gaze to his table and shuffled papers. The judge sighed. "All right. Let's hear your evidence, Mr. Povich." "I call Ernie Burt to the stand." Grant's cameraman stood and went to the witness chair. Once he was sworn in, Povich said, "Is it true that you captured this terrible crime on videotape?" "Every bloody second."
The song is Dire Wolf from Reckoning by the Grateful Dead. For more fun, visit VampireKittyCat.com.